Welcome back to New World Next Week. I'm James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And I'm James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com. I would like to present these facts for your review and comments. We've got that story, plus the latest developments in Pedogate. But first, when he was president, he called them fat cats, but now he is likely thanking them for a huge payday. Former President Barack Obama, less than 100 days out of office, has agreed to speak at a Wall Street conference run by Cantor Fitzgerald. Senior people at the firm can confirm his speaking fee will be $400,000, which is nearly twice as much as Hill Dog charged private businesses for such events. Obama has agreed to speak at Cantor's healthcare conference, of course, in September of this year, and will be the keynote luncheon speaker for one day during the event. Obama's signed the contract, but the company, a mid-sized New York-based investment bank, is waiting to coordinate with the former president before making a formal announcement. And that Obama could ultimately back out of the arrangement depending on his schedule and other concerns such as adverse publicity. A spokesman for the former president didn't return a call for comment to Fox Business, which is where we get this article from. A spokeswoman for Cantor Fitzgerald would not deny that Obama has agreed to speak to the firm and at the $400,000 fee. Now we'll include, like we do, everything that we mention will be down in the show notes. And along with that article, Obama's $400,000 Cantor speech makes him Wall Street's newest fat cat. I'll also include an entry from something I used to use quite a bit back in the aughties, and that's what's called the Complete 9/11 Timeline at historycommons.org, where you can look at Cantor Fitzgerald Securities and read the giant laundry list of terror drills they ran all through the 90s, all up through even the summer of 2001, that pretty much precisely mirrored the events that would miraculously take place. Now that, in this situation, James, is somewhat a sidebar to the situation of Barry Satoro joining the Fat Cats. James?
Well, I mean, is anybody surprised at this? He did his service from before day one, even in office, still during the campaign, when he took time out with John McCain to make that bipartisan pledge of support for the banks and the banksters. And we have to pass the bailout, people. And they rammed it through Congress eventually after the first attempt. They got it through the second attempt. And of course, that was only the $700 billion kind of sideshow to the trillions and trillions and trillions that the Fed was pumping in through the back door. So mission accomplished. And this is the mission accomplished of the Obama presidency. Hey, here you go. Here's your nice big fat reward. So again, is this a surprise to any but the most hardened Obama bots out there? I think not. But, you know, at any rate, if there's anything good to be said about this, at least we don't have a Hillary presidency, because, of course, she would have been the exact same thing, right? But now we have someone in office who wouldn't do things like appoint Goldman Sachs executives into high cabinet positions or any of that stuff that that we would have seen in the Hillary presidency. So everything's saved, I guess.
Well, I think, yeah, just as you're saying right now and commenting on the 2016 selection, I think people forget how seamless a transition the 2008 presidential selection game was. Just as you said, yeah, they both, we're going to pause everything. We're going to put the game show on hold so we can all run and get rooting support. And Obama basically went around saying, you guys, you know I'm going to be the guy, so play ball and we'll pass this thing. And you'll, because, you know, they'll get their back scratched once he was, of course, safely ensconced in office. It just keeps rolling on and on, and sometimes every 4 to 8 years, people get really mad about it, James. And we've really seen that. And our second story this week on episode 308 of New World Next Week, we take it from Matt Agarest, and I think it is another chapter in the ongoing pedogate, hashtag pedophiles, call it what you want. Former Trump manager chair just arrested for child sex trafficking during the campaign. Judge Tim Nolan of California, Kentucky, represents District 5 on the Campbell County School Board. He served as the chair of the 2016 Donald Trump campaign in Campbell County, and he's just been charged with felony child trafficking. Nolan is now facing charges of felony human trafficking of a minor, felony inducing a minor to engage in sex, and a third count of giving alcohol to a minor. As River City News reports, Kentucky Attorney General Andy Beshear announced that Nolan is charged with human trafficking, a Class B felony, first-degree unlawful transaction with a minor, a Class C felony, and third-degree unlawful transaction with a minor, a Class A misdemeanor. It is unclear as of yet just who Nolan's customers were. However, there were many of them, as the charges include the note that the child was subjected to commercial sexual activity. Judge Tim Nolan of California, Kentucky is 70 years old. He's scheduled to appear in a preliminary hearing coming up on May 5th. Now, James, I had not actually heard about this story, but I saw you kind of went on a bit of a tweet storm in this past week, and you've got a bit of this story kind of broken down, so I'll hand it over to you on this.
Yeah, well, again, this is one of those stories that shouldn't come as a surprise to any but the most hardened Trump bots, as people will remember from my conversation with Pierce Redmond well before the election, this election, where we were talking about Trump and his relationship with billionaire pedophile Epstein, Jeffrey Epstein, which is why he never has and never will mention Epstein when he talks about Bill Clinton and his sexcapades, because of course we know Bill Clinton took, whatever, 30 flights on the Lolita Express and all of that, but less well-publicized is Trump's relationship with Epstein, because people like to say, oh yeah, he made that one comment in that New Yorker story or New York story back in 2002, where he said, oh, I know Jeffrey, he's a hell of a guy, he likes to party, he likes his women young, he likes a good time as much as me, or whatever he said, which of course is disgusting and disgraceful in retrospect, but hey, that was 2002, right? There was no relationship between them after that. Oh, wait. Wait, 2004, we have the messages from Epstein's phone logs with two messages from Donald J. Trump. We know Donald Trump was in Epstein's black book, or in the black book that the butler was keeping and released, in which he circled certain names as material witnesses to pedophilia. Oh, Donald Trump is circled in that little black book. Interesting. Oh, and we know that Virginia Roberts, who was the one who obviously fingered Prince Andrew, that picture, the famous picture now came out with her and Prince Andrew when she was underage, and of course she was involved with Jeffrey Epstein, recruited from Mar-a-Lago, where her father also worked, Trump's Mar-a-Lago, which, by the way, just happens to be less than 1 mile away from Epstein's Palm Beach residence, where he was committing child sexual abuse during the time when he knew Trump. Do you think Trump is going to do this big crackdown that people were thinking? Oh, you know, once Sessions gets confirmed, the crackdown's coming, they're going to start arresting all these child sex traffickers. No, they're not. And the people who like to cite this number that he's already arrested or been part of this big crackdown, 1,500 plus arrests, it's phony, fake statistics. That is fake news. I'll put a link into a Reason.com blog about Trump's mythical crackdown on sex trafficking, where they look at the actual numbers and the actual cases that are being lumped in, this big crackdown that's supposedly happening that isn't happening. And hey, I mean, I don't know about you, but I don't see Podesta or anyone like that, you know, even being questioned, let alone put behind bars. So yeah, mission accomplished for the cacistocracy. Once again, they put their man in power, and he's going to protect the child sex traffickers, and nothing's going to change. Vote all you want. It ain't going to change.
And it's essentially the same situation as in story one. They put their guy in, and they'll be protected. Whether that's money, whether that's occult abuse, or God knows what. It's all those things. So we'll include the link to what you just mentioned, James, the 1500 from Reason. So, and also you can see, and we should, of course, even just put them on the screen in this episode, the message logs of Trump's calls from Epstein's in the phone message book. You see it all right in there. And Trump's lawyer, a little reminder, James, these are all from your tweets. Trump's lawyer tried to cover up Trump's deposition in the pedophile Epstein case.
Oh, and now, one more thing we should add. Yes, he was fingered by Mark Epstein as being on the Lolita Express at least once. So he has flown on Trump's plane as well, just like Bill Clinton.
As we were looking into this earlier and doing some research, and I think it was maybe it was a story on the sidebar. So we get this original story about the campaign chair being arrested in Kentucky via Matt Agarest on the Free Thought Project. It was on the sidebar there. Another story that's kind of developing right now in my neighbor to the north, up in Washington State. Victims now alleging the sitting Seattle mayor, Ed Murray, raped them as kids, and get into a gigantic police cover-up. I'll probably talk about this a little bit more on my own shows, of course, as this hits kind of close to home, as James, you and I have also been trying to talk about and expose this kind of thing for a long, long time. And I've got years and years of articles worth of archives on MediaMonarchy.com. It's, you know, it's Franklin cover-up, Mark Dutroux, and about all of these things. It's the continuing story. It's no one small thing. So in a strange way, we are back in the Pacific Northwest for our third and final story that we grabbed from Motherboard. Man fined $500 for the crime of writing, "I'm an engineer," in an email to the Oregon government gods. An electronics engineer said he found a flaw in traffic lights. The Oregon Engineering Board fined him for it. In September 2014, Matt Yarlstrom, an electronics engineer living in Beaverton, Oregon, sent an email to the state's engineering board. The email claimed that yellow traffic lights don't last long enough, which puts the public at risk. "I would like to present these facts for your review and comments," he wrote. The email resulted not in a meeting, but with a threat. The Oregon State Board of Examiners for Engineering and Land Surveying responded with this dystopian message, quote, "ORS 672.020(1) prohibits the practice of engineering in Oregon without registration. At a minimum, your use of the title electronics engineer and the statement 'I'm an engineer' create violations," end quote. In January of this year, Yarlstrom was officially fined $500 by the state for the crime of practicing engineering without being registered. Now, this is one of those longer stories, James, when we've gotten into these kind of stories. Of course, anything that has to do with the lumbering arm of the law has a long trail and a lot of ins and outs. So, like always, we'll include everything for the show notes to everybody kind of continuing to read this. And you've been on the traffic lights a bit lately, James.
It's interesting how many things, larger societal issues revolve around things like traffic lights. But here's another case. And this guy's defense, I think, is pretty bulletproof. He's not charging anything. He's not acting in a business fashion here. He's just taking these cases to various boards and making presentations and things. That's all he's doing. He's not presenting himself like on a tax return, "I am an engineer" or anything. There's nothing like that. All he's doing is using basic mathematics, as he points out in his defense. "I'm using, you know, Newton's laws and things like this. You cannot prosecute me for this. You cannot, you know, throw me in jail for that or fine me." So it's a pretty basic First Amendment issue here, and it's cut and dried. Unless, you know, you happen to be statist and obsessed with government control over every aspect of our lives. And it's, I mean, I really do hope people will go through and read through this story. I'll put another link into another article I saw on it that fleshed it out in some more detail. But it's just another example of the, not just stupidity, it's more than stupidity. It's the fact that these people in these positions of power have egg on their face because they're being upstaged by this amateur. He's, you know, what's he? He's not even an engineer. Okay, we can fine him for that. Let's do it. And I think that's it. It's just another case of people abusing power that shouldn't be theirs in the first place.
I'm surprised they didn't call him a quack. Just trying to besmirch his name. And this is another case, I think, where it's, you know, shoot the messenger. So the higher-ups in Oregon, I think this is an important one to include, James, just as a related, and we've talked about some of these other traffic stories, but a story just a couple of months ago that was in Forbes got into the sitting Oregon governor, Kate Brown, and our sitting attorney general, Ellen Rosenblum, blazing the trail of the Oregon trail, rather, of political patronage. Governor Kate Brown and Attorney General Ellen Rosenblum both took in hundreds of thousands of dollars in campaign donations from businesses with state contracts. Some of those places like AT&T, Microsoft, FedEx, Eli Lilly, Pfizer, and many, many more. Don't you think in a lot of these situations that they're also the contractors who do the red light cameras? So we talked about this, James, just a couple of months ago, turning that traffic ticket into the constitutional trial of the century. But I've got, actually, back 7 years ago, cities shortening yellow traffic lights for deadly profit. So what Matt Yarlstrom is talking about is nothing new. Cities have been busted for this all around the country. Private contractors put in the lights, they dial back the yellow so that gets people more tickets, and, you know, sometimes more people get into wrecks and die. But it's, you know, just the cost of doing business. Suppose that's not a very good news way to wrap up this episode, James. So unless you have anything else to say about the police state traffic situation, I'll make a good news note.
Well, actually, now that you mention it, I think I have an idea for a different video about traffic lights, but I'm feeling self-conscious about it now, so I might keep it under my hat for a while. Anyway, go on.
No, don't feel self-conscious about it. I mean, that's what's great about just like you're saying, you know, Matt Jarlstrom is embarrassing the big boys. The work, hopefully, that we're able to do can also hopefully embarrass the big boys. If you get the sniff onto something, man, and you need to follow that trail, please absolutely do that. I loved seeing the picture of the path walking through. Of course, you know, explaining it, you know, free market and central planning in one picture. Or see, I forget exactly how you said it. The good news note I'll make is the latest episode of Good News Next Week, open source textbooks cutting college costs. And there's also some good news notes about peer-to-peer medicine sites and also some tool libraries. So just some of the other ways that we are winning and hopefully some solutions-oriented stories that is, it's not all bad news. And we are the little guys. We are trying to embarrass the big boys, and we can only do it with your support. And we're both on Patreon, and of course, we'd appreciate you subscribing and becoming members and doing all that good stuff that we need to keep us going.
That's James. It. And let's take a moment to thank all the subscribers who are already subscribing and making this work possible, all those who are about to subscribe and make this work possible, and all the people who contribute in other ways, like sending us story ideas, because we can't keep all our, you know, our eyes on all the 24/7 news feeds by ourselves. So we do appreciate all of that support, and we'll be back doing it again next week. James, thanks for three great stories.
All right, man. Thank you.